Happy 7th of July. Well, there you go. It's the first program for the new financial year. Lots happening. I did hear a rumour that it's World Chocolate Day today. I'm not sure whether that's true or not, but I think it might be. And even if it isn't, well, let's make it so or something like that. My very special guest today, all the way from South Australia, is none other than Megan Buntine. Hi, Megan. How are you?
Hi, Bruce. I'm good. I didn't know it was World Chocolate Day, but I'll certainly celebrate that with everyone later on.
I think any excuse, hey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so exactly where, I know you're travelling at the moment, exactly where in South Australia are you, Megan?
So currently on the York Peninsula near Ardrossan, lovely part of the world here on Narangara country in this NAIDOC week that we're in the middle of.
Yes, we are NAIDOC week. I meant to mention that on my introduction. A very significant week. Megan, we've lost a little bit of time this morning because of that technical glitch, but we'll make up for it. We can both talk a little bit quicker or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll give the shorthand version.
Look, listeners, we're going to talk this morning because it is the new start of another year. Most organisations tick over the start of their financial record keeping and well, board things and all of that on the 1st of July. And so this morning we're going to talk succession planning and board development. Wow, that sounds like a big area. It's interesting looking at the word succession, Megan, and I looked it up in the dictionary to see what it actually means, and it talks about you know, people succeeding to a throne or a position or something like that. But it's interesting that the word succession itself has got success right at the beginning of it, and I reckon succession planning and board development is setting an organisation up for success, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's a really good observation, actually. I've never thought of it that way, but it really is about being proactive and doing things well in advance so that you do have the greatest chance of success when you come to your AGM and your elections, getting the right people on the board. You know, so it's that time of the year again, and AGM season starting for most organisations that are starting their financial year on the 1st of July. So, set yourselves up for success. Do that succession planning well in advance.
And it's not just a haphazard thing. It really is a very intentional approach to an organisation's oversight and so on, isn't it, Megan? It's being very deliberate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where so many organisations I see fall down on succession planning. That's why it's something that I've really taken on and I'm trying to promote to organisations to do it more proactively, because I see so many organisations that leave it till the last minute. You go to the AGM, there's a flurry of papers quickly trying to get people to sign up to nominate for the committee or nominate for the board, and that's just not the way to do it, because, you know, you're not being strategic about who you might be trying to recruit. You haven't gone through a process of identifying what you need. It's just, you know, a warm body is...
Yes, and Megan, sometimes what happens in those situations, and I've seen it happen, and I'm sure you have many times, that someone sort of reluctantly puts their hand up because nobody else seems to be doing it, and you end up with someone actually saying yes to doing something when maybe their heart wasn't in it, or they weren't actually the best qualified person for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that puts the individual in a difficult position too, because, you know, as you know, they perhaps their heart's not in it, and you're not setting them up for success, and therefore you're not setting the organisation up for success either.
Megan, we need to roll back though, don't we? Because this whole approach to, you know, good governance with a committee or a board really needs to start way before now, like 6 months ago or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I often say to organisations, you know, start your succession planning at least 3 months before your AGM. And if you're going to have some people in significant roles who are stepping down, you need to be doing that succession planning, you know, more than 3 months, you know, potentially 6 months in advance. And it's funny, I said that at a training session I was running once, and somebody in the audience, in the group piped up and said, "No, you're wrong." And I said, "Oh, okay, tell me about that. Why am I wrong?" He said, "The day you need to start succession planning is the day after your AGM." I thought, yeah, well, that's giving yourself lots of time.
Yes, yes. Do you think the importance of good succession planning has changed over the years, Megan? I mean, we've had this incredible COVID overlay that you try not to talk about all the time, but, I mean, that's changed things again, hasn't it?
Yeah, and also I think that, you know, even before COVID came on the scene, organisations were recognising that turnover at your board and committee level is a good thing. It brings in some new blood and some diversity and some new ideas. And also it saves people from, you know, I know some people who've sat in the same role on the same committee for 25 years and they're just so over it and they want to get out, but they don't feel that they can step down because there's nobody who's sort of been trained up to take over. There's no focus on succession planning at all. So I think there's sort of two sides of the coin. It's about saving people from that, but also ensuring the organisation has that new blood and that fresh ideas coming in.
Megan, it seems like the sort of the benchmark now is to have 3-year terms, perhaps of no more than three times, like 9 years. That seems to be a bit of a sort of a governance standard. Would you say?
Yeah, I agree. I'm seeing that starting to come in a lot more now, and I think there's a couple of advantages of that. I think firstly, if you're going through the effort of getting the right people in who are going to have the biggest impact on the organisation, then getting them to commit for a 3-year term, it's sort of like you've got that longer term view rather than just 12 months at a time. And I think people know what they're signing up to. I know that's certainly been my experience. You know, if you take on a 3-year term, you know, you sort of think, yeah, okay, well, I've made this commitment for 3 years, I'll stick it out. I think that it also gives you the capacity to stagger then the renewal on your committee or your board. So you're only, if everyone's got a 3-year term, you've effectively got only a third of your governing body is potentially up for election each AGM. And I think that's good for the organisation in terms of the shared understanding and that, you know, the brains trust of the organisation being fairly stable. I mean, obviously people can leave sort of mid-term if circumstances change, but generally, you know, it sort of creates that expectation. And I think having that 3x3 that you talked about, yeah, that gives you that, I guess, that twilight clause on, okay, well, you're only going to be here for a maximum of 9 years, so it's not like 30 years' time you're still going to be sitting here feeling like you can't leave.
Yes.
So I think there's a range of reasons why that's a good approach.
Which is not good for the person who feels that they can't get out of it, and it's not good for the organisation having the same person in the same role for such a long time.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the thing is that people need to be aware that if they're going to take that approach, you know, the 3x3 approach, you'll need to go through the process of updating. If you're an incorporated association, you'll have to go through the process of updating your rules because your rules spells out how your elections work and the length of terms and those sorts of things.
What about people who are stepping down, Megan? What would you recommend in terms of, you know, like, I guess in the workplace we talk about exit interviews, don't we? But, you know, do you think there's something to be gained by talking to people as they exit from roles as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that having good communication all the way along is really important. And I think that if we're going to do our succession planning well, we want to be communicating with our fellow board members and getting a sense well in advance if possible as to when their intentions are that they will step down, if that's going to be, you know, at the end of their first 3 years or whatever that might be. I guess the approach that I take is, you know, start working with the board 6 months out, have conversations with individual members. What are your intentions? What are your thoughts going forward? And get that sense of who might be stepping down and having the conversation so you know who you're going to have to backfill. But certainly, you know, through that process, getting people's input and their thoughts about how things work well and, you know, what their experience has been on that committee or that board. But I would also suggest that you need to do that on an annual basis as a bit of a board review at the end of each year. So, you know, maybe towards the end of June if you want to do it on the financial year or the end of, you know, into sort of leading up to Christmas, but do an annual board review. So people are getting plenty of opportunities that if things are not, they're not comfortable with what's going on, if they haven't had the courage to raise it at the time, you're sort of creating that space where you're encouraging them to communicate their thoughts about how it's going.
And Megan, intertwined with all of this, of course, is the need to identify what sort of skills you actually need in a vacancy that you've got on the committee, or you know, to start thinking, you know, do we need someone who's got a bit of social media marketing experience? Do we need someone with some fundraising expertise, et cetera? You know, that becomes critical too, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's one of the first steps you need to take is, you know, if you haven't already got a board skills matrix or a committee skills matrix in place, develop one. So, you know, sit down with the rest of your team on the committee of management and brainstorm, well, what skills do we need around the table to support our organisation? And create, you know, use that to create your board skills matrix and use that then to the tool to, you know, review it periodically to make sure it's still current and still up to date and there's nothing new that you need to add to it. And then use it as a guide to sort of say, well, okay, who have we got sitting around the table currently? What skills have we ticked off? Where are the gaps? Then those gaps tell you the kind of people that you're going to be out there looking for when you're looking for new board members.
Mm. You're listening to Megan Buntine and we're talking board succession planning, committees changing over, planning ahead for as we head into the AGM season. We're going to talk much more about that in a moment, but let's have a song. We've got Gloria Gaynor and I Will Survive.
I just walked in to find you here with that sad look upon your face.
And you're listening to Bruce Argyle here with Community Conversations. After our small glitch at the start of the program, we're off and racing. And on Zoom, I have the very amazing Megan Buntine, all the way from South Australia. Megan, and I reckon you know more about committee and board succession planning and development than anyone else I know, certainly. So we're going to tap your brains a little bit more this morning. We've just been talking, succession planning and setting ourselves up for success. That word that takes up more than half of the word succession. There you go. Megan, other thoughts? What ducks do we need to line up to make sure we have this sorted? I mean, what are the key things that we haven't talked about?
So I think the things that you need to do to be ready to hit the ground running at about the 3 month mark is you need to make sure that you've got some good role statements in place for your committee or board position. So you've got something concrete that you can effectively recruit to. So things that you can share with people who might be prospective new board or committee members, so they understand what's going to be expected of them, but also so you're clear as an organisation about what you expect of people who are in those roles. I think, it's really important to think about who are the potential candidates within our networks, because that's where I think you're going to get the most success. It's those individual contacts, people you can tap on the shoulder, take them out for a coffee, have a conversation. I hear time and time again organisations saying, well, we advertise it on Facebook or we put out an email and we got no response. And I think that's fairly typical. So clearly, I think you still need to do that, because that's really raising people's awareness that you're looking for people. But I think where you're going to get success is having those individual conversations, in person, if at all possible.
With plenty of warning, Megan, not just the last minute tap on the shoulder.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm thinking, 3 or 4 months out from your AGM. So this is what's so important to do this succession planning stuff. Think about it well in advance. It's almost like it needs to be on your mind throughout the year, so that you sort of what point you're at. So okay, well, we're 6 months out, we need to do this. We're 3 months out, we need to do this, and so forth. So, I mean, obviously, it's not a silver bullet. It's not going to assure that you get 100% coverage, but it's going to maximise your chances of getting the right people around the table.
Mm.
Going through a process of putting together a little applicant pack and getting some, updating your orientation and your induction pack for new people, so you're ready to go once you get those people on the board. And I think, going through a proper process of once you've brainstormed who those potential candidates are, going out and approaching them, maybe having some sort of a recruitment process where maybe once you've had a conversation and they indicate that they might be interested, get them to come in and have a conversation with, say, the chair and the deputy chair, so that you go through a bit of a process of hopefully getting to understand how that person would best fit for that role. And, you might have a couple of people in that, if you really do your succession planning well, you might have a couple of people vying for the one role, wouldn't that be?
What a nice thought. And Megan, what about and we won't go into it too much today because of time, but what about considerations of diversity as well, and gender diversity, age, I don't think that's something that we do very well in recruiting people. We tend to recruit people who perhaps are the same as ourselves rather than different. Mm.
I think that's a really good point. And I think the other thing too is, I know, I sat on a hospital board recently and we talked about diversity around the table, and it was very much a gender diversity conversation. And I sort of said, hang on, guys, diversity is more than just gender. It's a whole range of other things. So really thinking about, what does diversity mean? Are you reflecting your constituents? So, who's your listener base, for example, in the example of community radio, who are the people who you're trying to talk to, and is that reflected in your makeup of your board or your committee of management? And the same goes for any organisation. You and I obviously have an affinity with the disability sector because we've both worked in that area, and I think that's an area that I think is really important to make sure that, if you're an organisation that serves people with disabilities, it should be being led and governed to the greatest extent possible by people who have lived experience and not just family members necessarily. I mean, not discounting that they have huge amount to contribute, but we need to get people who actually have the disability themselves to be contributing to. Mm. And the same goes for any organisation.
Sometimes a little bit harder to recruit people who are different from yourselves because we don't tend to move in the same circles or something like that. But that is just so important, Megan. So how do we do that? It's a matter, isn't it, of talking to perhaps other organisations, to organisations that recruit volunteers and the like?
Yeah, and I think that's why it's so important that we actually sit down and we're strategic about this. You know, sit down with your committee of management and just spend some time brainstorming, okay, who do we know who might, if we're missing this particular element on our skills, our board skills register, you know, who do we know within our combined networks, or even it might not be someone you know personally, but someone who you know of, within the broader community that you could potentially take out for a coffee and have a chat, who might fit the bill in those different areas. It takes a bit of thinking, a bit of work, and that's why you need to be doing it proactively and in advance.
You mentioned a moment ago, and I think I cut you off, about having a role description and a bit of an induction pack. Talk us through that, Megan, and perhaps for listeners, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Where can they go to get some of this information?
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much of this information out there. To quote Adam Bant, you know, just Google it. I think, you know, our community is a really good place to start. They've got some great information on their website. But apart from all their policy templates that they've got, they have templates around role statements for you know, different positions. The AICD, so the Australian Institute of Company Directors, has a range of resources there that you can tap into. Local community-based organisations, I often refer them to Landcare as well, because the Victorian Landcare Gateway has some great tools and templates and, you know, template policies, role statements, all those sorts of things that are great resources that, you know, it's a government agency, so it's publicly available. There's nothing wrong with you picking up and, you know, using it as a starting point to create your own. So, yeah, never feel that you've got to start from scratch. Don't reinvent the wheel. There's plenty of examples out there that you could tap into and use.
Mm. You mentioned also to give consideration to advertising or spreading the word through newsletters and around in the community. And sometimes you just get people who you totally unexpectedly come out of the woodwork, so to speak, and say, hey, I've always wanted to be involved in such and such, and put their hands up.
Yeah, look, it might be a case of going and speaking, you know, to a Rotary Club, for example, and just doing a little spiel on your organisation, who you are, what you do, the value that you add to the community, and that could be a way of tapping into somebody who's interested. Or, you know, what are the clubs and organisations that you're involved in, or that, you know, even so far as jumping onto the local council websites, most of the local council websites will have a community directory that lists all the community organisations that are operating in that area. So, you know, is there a way that you can tap into some of those groups there and their members and see who's got, you know, an interest in what you do? It might be that they're a similar organisation that they're a member of, so they don't, you know, for whatever reason, they don't get involved on their board or committee, but they might be interested in being on your board or committee. Mm. So, yeah, it's really just think outside of the square.
No, fantastic. You're listening to Megan Buntine all the way from South Australia via Zoom this morning. We're talking succession planning and board development. We're going to come back and talk about board development in a moment, boards or committees, your local organisation. And just so appreciative, Megan, of your willingness to share your expertise. And perhaps we should just say that you do have an amazing website with a lot of resources on it too, which I'll just give you, listeners, which is www.mjbconsulting, that's all one word, mjbconsulting.net.au. And Megan's always happy to hear from you, from anyone. She's very passionate about the not-for-profit and the community sector, and so much so that you're even organising a not-for-profit networking lunch. I think that's on today, Megan. There you go.
Yeah, later on today. So they're monthly opportunities for people to come together. They're free and they're online. It's just a bit of a get-together. We're sort of attracting people from all over Australia now, which is great, but I think it's good sometimes to talk to people in other parts of the not-for-profit sector and hear how they're dealing with similar issues that, you know, we might be facing, and get some new ideas. And so, interestingly enough, our topic of conversation today is going to be succession planning and board development.
There you go. So very relevant. Let's have a listen to Hot Chocolate and Everyone's a Winner.
FM acknowledges the traditional owners, the Wurundjeri people, as the custodians of this land we broadcast from. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
And you've joined us this morning for Community Conversations. I'm Bruce Argyle, and great to have your company. We've been talking this morning succession planning and board or committee development for community organisations, not-for-profits, with my very special guest, Megan Buntine, who knows lots about this stuff. Megan, you've always known lots about, you've always been very passionate about this space, haven't you?
Yeah, always learning along the way, learning by experience and learning by mistakes and learning by other people's experience, I guess.
Yes, it's so important though, isn't it? Because at the heart of community groups, if you don't get this space right, then so often there's a whole lot of other things go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important to get that really strong, effective governing body in place as much as possible, because everything then flows from that. And I think, you know, we've talked a bit about succession planning, why that's so important, and to do that early rather than leaving it for the last minute. And I think, you know, the flow on from that is around, once you've got that really good board in place, how do you continue to inspire them and motivate them and develop them along the way? And obviously, you know, we touched on the importance of when you get the new people on board, doing some orientation and induction for them so they understand the organisation better. But I think it's important also for the returning board members and the existing board members to keep that refresher and that, you know, revisit. I did a session with an organisation recently that hadn't done this sort of work for a long, long time. And so even though they hadn't had any changeover on their board, they'd forgotten a lot of that, those really key important things. And it really brought them back to, what are we here for? What are the fundamentals of why we exist? What do we need to be focusing on? So they found it really energising and good to sort of refocus their strategy on what they're supposed to be doing, which is great.
I sit on a number of boards, as you know, Megan. One of the ones I was on last week, because it was the first meeting for the new year, we sat and basically looked at which committees and who's going to chair them and where do we want to change and who'd like to step up and who'd like to, you know, et cetera. And that was a really useful conversation, you know, just to...
Fantastic.
Just to probably reset. I think that's what we're talking about, you know. Even without, as you were saying, even without necessarily having people change, we all need to be sort of, hang on, let's just stop and rethink what we're doing here and why, and maybe there's someone better that, you know, should be doing this role or is more qualified and so on. But you also mentioned training along the way, Megan, and I know you're very passionate about that and you do a lot of training yourself. Do we need to encourage our committee board reps to avail themselves of more training?
Yeah, look, I think we do. I guess I come from a continuous improvement mindset anyway, so I'm a bit of a training junkie myself, and I'm always looking for, you know, new training sessions, even, you know, good governance stuff. I'll go out and find out what other people are talking about so I can keep myself refreshed and up to date. Because things do change over time, you know, best practice changes, legislation changes, a whole range of things change. So we do need to keep ourselves up to date and, you know, focused on the things that are important. So as you say, whether it's new people or whether it's bringing the newbies up to speed with the rest of us. And just that, I think what you just described is really good, because a lot of organisations don't do that. Having that, you know, annual refresher just to get us all back on track, think about, okay, well, what are we focusing on for the next 12 months ahead? What are our priorities and what are, you know, how are we going to deliver that?
We've mentioned AGMs a couple of times and I think legally, particularly for incorporated associations, Megan, we have to have them within 5 months. Is it the end of November?
Right.
Is that about right?
So. Yeah, so under the new, well, I keep saying the new legislation, it's 10 years old now, under the current legislation, we now have 5 months to get those AGM done from the 5 months of the start of our financial year. There's actually there's a really good resource that's, it used to be called the Secretary Satchel. It's recently been updated at the end of last year by not-for-profit law branch. They're part of Justice Connect, and it's called now A Guide to Running an Incorporated Association in Victoria.
Great.
And it's a fabulous resource. It talks about all those sorts of things, about how to run your AGM as per the legislation and the rules. It talks about things like having your AGM within the first 5 months of your new financial year. It basically, it's my Bible to running an incorporated association in Victoria. So it's a really good resource, and I thoroughly recommend it to anybody who sits on the governing body for an incorporated association in Victoria.
Just give us the new name again, Megan, as I write it down. A guide to.
I've got to make sure I'm correct.
That's all right.
It's called a guide to running incorporated association in Victoria.
In Victoria, okay. And where would I locate one of those?
So if you look up not for profit law,
yep.
Google not for profit law, on their web page, they've got a resources page, and it's on there. It can be a bit tricky to find sometimes, but if anybody's having trouble, if they just email me or give me a ring, I'll shoot them through the link.
And if you do want to email Megan, it's just megan@mjbconsulting.net.au. And I know you're very good on responding to your emails, Megan, so there's a big shout out. Look, we're almost out of time. I think, Megan, because we started a little late, we might just continue through rather than take another song. Sorry about that, listeners, but because we want to obviously wrap up in time for the 10 o'clock news. So let's just pull it all together, Megan. I'm hearing that the 1st of July or sometime around there is a good time to reset, to refocus, to rethink about who you're going to have on your committee or on your board. What else is it a good time to do?
Look, I think the take-home message from the conversation today, I think for anyone, should be, you know, be proactive. Do it in plenty of time in advance. If you've set your AGM date, you know, be thinking 3 to 6 months before that about how you're going to go about your succession planning. And then once you've had your AGM, have a good plan in place as to how you're going to orientate your newbies and how you're going to refresh your returning committee members or board members.
And be thinking all the time about that diversity as well, Megan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's, for our last 30 seconds we've got, NAIDOC Week, Megan, really important, isn't it, in the calendar, in the annual calendar?
Yes, it is, isn't it? It's a great opportunity to celebrate and focus on things that are important, such as the Uluru Statement, getting that representation in. Well, we're talking about good governance, aren't we, really?
So yes.
It's about getting that diversity and that representation to the sort of the governing levels within the country. So hopefully we see some movement on that in the coming time.
Let's really hope so. You've been listening to Megan Buntine. You've been a part of Community Conversations. Thanks for your company this morning. I will be back same time next week. We're going to have an interesting guest who's going to share, a little bit of poetry mixed with a whole lot of music and dialogue and conversation. Look forward to your company next Thursday morning. Thanks again, Megan, for dialing in from South Australia.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.